There we are. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. A vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. This vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect when some people on Facebook decided to tell me, look, we're posting it the way that we want to, and that's the way that it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to do it the way that you want it to, because that's you, and you're not us, and we're posting shit because it's fine the way that we do it, even if it's wrong. So shut up just because you're right. Meh. Part of the reason of doing this podcast was also to vlogcast. Wow, look at me. I'm thinking about a couple of different things I'll explain in a minute. To go through the whole truism of sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I am known as Shujin Tribble all over the world. You can find me on Google with a search, which is, wow, really eye-opening. You guys should try that for yourself sometime. I was born to a Roman Catholic family in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island. I now live outside of Buffalo, New York. I identify currently as an unabashed atheist. Joining us tonight on the round table is Dallin.
Good evening, folks. Online, I go by the name Dallin, sometimes Robotech Tiger, depending on where you want to find me. Yeah. I was born into a Lutheran household, although religion was not a very large part of my life. In fact, my parents always encouraged me to keep an open mind, always ask questions, and never ever stop learning. This open-mindedness has benefited me greatly over the years as I've traveled, experienced new things, and was able to embrace a lot of new things as a result. For me, religion has never been that important in my life, and I was more than content for many years to take a live-and-let-live approach to it. However, now seeing what's happening to my friends down in the United States, oh, I should also mention I'm Canadian, having seen what the fundamentalists are doing to society, both sides of the border and around the world, I decided it was time to take a stand with the non-believers to try to bring back some kind of common sense and sensibility to, well, to humanity.
Also joining us, Unrenown Tech.
Hi, folks. Bogey, Heretic Woman, hi, we see you. Welcome to the show. I was born in southern, I was born in Maryland, raised in New York, returned to Maryland. And there's actually a surprising amount of atheists or agnostics down here. I'm discovering more and more as I'm more open about who I am with the people that I become friends with. I'm also finding a lot of people who have lots and lots of questions. And, you know, it's very fun. But I am a atheist. I am a borderline anti-theist as well, just because I see the things that are done in the names of religions. And, you know, there's quite some really simple solutions to some of them. For those of you who are wondering, no, I am not suddenly turned Muslim. This is just a headband to keep my hair in check. And just for his proof, this is a pork rind.
And also,
and I'll send it over to our scout, our team scout over here.
Good evening, Joe.
Yo, good evening.
You gonna sell a slap chop?
No, I am not. I will smack the hell out of you. Good evening, folks. My name is Joseph. I was born in Chicago, Illinois, to a Irish Catholic family. Signed up with the military, served 8 years. And currently living in Pittsburgh as a graphic designer, gun nut, and atheist.
So all of you, welcome, of course, to the show. If you are planning on joining us live at this time and you have some questions that you'd like to go through, please take advantage of the question and answer system. We've got it over there, and I'll be talking about the topic momentarily. But of course, as usual, with apologies to Heath, Noah, and Lucinda from The Scathing Atheist, who we loved having on the show. We'll go ahead and we'll open with the 5-minute freestyle. 5 minutes on the clock. So, earlier today, as is my wont on the weekends, I was running deliveries for the company that I work for, Wedding Cakes, which I have a lot of fun doing. But this time around, I did something I don't normally do, which is I actually started working through what I was going to talk about tonight, which kind of becomes kind of meta that I'm telling you this part, but be that as it may. One of the podcasts that I've been listening to, and I listen to a lot, or at least I try to, it's a little bit tough when you've got 4 hours worth of Cash and Atheists on air, and Cash, wherever the hell are you? We're worried about you, man. Just so you know. So I was listening to the guys over at Cognitive Dissonance, and if you don't know about Cognitive Dissonance, they use the F word the same way that I sneeze. No, actually, I take that back. They use the F word about as much as I breathe, so unless you've got a good constitution, stay the hell away from it. But they were talking with the guys from Barroom Atheist, which was a great opportunity for me to take a listen to what other guys were doing, and it was really, really nice. Now, I'm not yet listening to them, and that's all on me because, you know, I don't have enough time to listen to all the stuff that I really want to, but I'm getting there. Anyway, one of the things that had happened was that the husband and wife team, and it's Susie and I'm blanking on the guy's name now. Anyway, husband and wife. The husband was fortunate enough, he went to the Reason Rally and came back not quite the closeted atheist that he was. She was still a believer. So he started talking up a lot more and was doing stuff like playing skeptical podcasts around her in the car, and she was not really having it. It was not really that happy for her. And it got to the point where she was even saying that it was really becoming damaging to their relationship. And she said something, she recounted this specific quote, and I wrote it down because it really caught my attention. It was, she said to him, "Don't kick my puppy." Now this really caught for me because I think it's pretty universal that a child animal, a child of any species, generally speaking, it's utter revulsion to consider doing such egregious damage to such a creature, whether human or any other, but a puppy especially, because dogs and puppies, the most domesticated animals that we would keep as pets, have a very special place in our hearts. So the idea of saying, "Don't hurt my feelings this much," I get that. That's a very, very strong statement to go ahead and say. But what got me about this was how the United States Supreme Court basically chose to let stand lower court rulings about marriage. Now, some people call it same-sex marriage. Some people call it marriage equality. I call it marriage for a very good reason. Because as somebody who is lucky enough to be in love once, who you are doesn't really much matter. If you've got that love and commitment for somebody else, you should have it. But that's not the point of this. The point is there's yelling and screaming from all walks of life. People who have been yelling and screaming about that the gays shouldn't be allowed to do this. And I'm really sick and tired of it because it's hundreds of thousands, perhaps even millions of people who are all screaming at the same time, "Don't kick my puppy." Well, I'm going to completely blow out our self-imposed PG-13 rating by saying, fuck you and your puppy. Absolutely fuck it all to hell and back again, and I'll tell you exactly why. Because your puppy was kicked over 200 years ago with the first amendment to the United States Constitution, the binding document that actually says, amongst other things, if you want to go ahead and live yourself through some version of religious faith, you're allowed to do that. And the government is not allowed to tell you that you can or you can't. They're allowed to sit back and go, okay, yeah, and? That's what it comes down to. And by that same token, you are not allowed to suddenly infiltrate yourself into the government to circumvent that in any way, shape, or form. It is simply part of the binding document. You're not allowed to do that. So as far as I'm concerned, you can go ahead and you can take your goddamn puppy out of the equation. Because as of 200 plus years ago, You didn't even have a dog in this race. Tough shit. So tonight we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic and something that we've been butting up against on many occasions and not been talking about it directly. We're going to talk about Dogma and not the movie. And I will admit, first off, I have not seen that movie. I've heard of it. I know of it. I don't know jack squat about it. But I'm not talking about that tonight. We're going to talk about Dogma, because that is really what has been driving a lot of the stuff that we talk about. And it is not necessarily religious dogma or religion. It might not be economic, political, social, whatever. But we're going to hash it out, and we're going to talk through what it is, why it is, what is it doing that's good or bad, and try to really identify why does it even matter. So we're going to start over here. We're going to start with you, Joe, simply because you are in the position of having to go through not exactly dogma, and we're going to – you know what? back it up a second. Let's describe what dogma is to us lay people first, so we've got a bouncing off point. Who wants to take it, because I've been talking for 7 minutes straight and I need a drink?
I can do it.
Be my go guest. You got it.
Okay, I looked it up a little bit earlier today, so we're going with the dictionary definition of it for the show, unless everybody disagrees with me on this. The short version, because there is a long version, the short version is dogma is a principle or a set of principles laid down by an authority as incontrovertibly true. In other words, there's no denying it. You cannot prove it false. And that's the short version.
I guess one way of thinking about it could be red is red, period. And it doesn't matter who's looking at it or if you're colorblind, red is red, then tough shit. I guess maybe.
Well, that being said, you can already see, as soon as you say something is absolutely incontrovertibly true, I imagine every single one of our skeptic radars just went off like that. Because, yeah, exactly. Like, red is red except when it's not.
Yeah, the scientist in me just went, really? Let's try this.
Yeah, the gravitational constant is X except when it's not.
Exactly.
Like, like right away, like especially if you've got sort of the skeptical mind, or at least a mind that thinks, I've said this a lot, the only constant in the universe is change. The only absolute is that nothing is absolute. And I am far too sober to be saying this, I must admit. Sadly, I have no alcohol.
I know the feeling. Joe, you look like you're ready to go ahead and just jump on that one right about now.
I'm about ready to jump on you, because thanks to you, I've got two things constantly going through my mind right now. One, Dr. Demento with dead puppies.
You're welcome.
And two, the pen is blue! The pen is blue! The pen is blue!
You could have just stopped at pen is, because I think some people would get the joke, some people wouldn't, but, you know, that's okay. You're welcome.
I just find it interesting that, you know, your 5 minute freestyle was talking about puppies and we're talking about dogma.
That's surprisingly enough, it just kind of worked out that way. And by the way, a couple of the folks who are watching out, Heretic Woman and Bogey, by the way, thank you both. Yes, it's Bill and Susie. I appreciate that. I'm sorry. While I'm talking, and those of you that have ever tried to do a Google Hangout or this kind of video shoot, one of the tricks, and yes, I'm giving away the magic, one of the tricks to making it look like you're faking sincerity is to actually look into the camera instead of on the monitor, because there's a difference.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, that really is one of the things that I early on, I tried to tell us early on, because I kind of knew about that. There's a real connection when you're actually talking with somebody and you look like you're talking at them. But anyway, for right now, that's a good enough word for it. So, Joe, I know what you're laughing at. You wanna go ahead and hit that, and then I'll tell you where I'm going.
It's starting to blow me how much you suck. No, seriously, you
do you mind? Tech?
Couldn't help it.
Oh boy.
You just hit the part right now.
Lights.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
That said,
we're 15 minutes into this.
I do have to do something, because while Tech did have a decent definition, I've got a bit of a more comprehensive one.
Sure.
Like I said, mine was a short version.
Well, this one's pretty short. Dogma. An official system of principles or tenets concerning faith, morals, behavior, etc. In such cases as church or government, synonymous with doctrine, teachings, set of beliefs, or philosophy.
I'll go with that. That's good enough for me right now.
Well, I mean, what Joe's basically said is that the term dogma can apply to not just religion, but it can be, like, you can be dogmatic about a lot of things.
Yep.
A lot of different fields of study.
Yeah, and that's exactly the reason why I wanted to hit this finally, because there have been a couple of nights where we've butted up against this. Now, it's easy enough to go ahead and talk about dogma in relation to religion, because there are a number of times where, with religion, you are taught what the rules are, and that's it. Period. End of story. For instance, if you decided that you no longer wanted to be connected with Islam, the dogma says this person is no longer worthy of breathing, so you must destroy them. Or am I thinking of the Satanists on that one?
Well, anyway, it depends on which teachings you're following, but yeah. Tech?
Tech, if that
I'm going to be ribbing you all night as long
as... Tech? Don't. Thank you. Anyway.
I thought we had enough problems with gesturbation in Second Life.
Yeah, well, we'll see what we can do about that. So, anyway, but
what do you think, Autumn?
The religious dogma is an extremely hard thing to try and deal with, because even though I absolutely hated the first three movies, it is one line that I can agree with. Only a Sith deals in absolutes. Now, it's a horrific trilogy. But there's a certain something to that statement. I mean, when you deal with absolute anything, you paint yourself into a corner instantly, because all you need to do is just step one inch out of that box, not even, and you're done for. You don't know where to go. You don't know what to do, because everything that you've had has been defined by that dogma, by that box, and once that gets broken, you're screwed. Everything falls apart around you.
Yeah, there really is no such thing as damage control once you've stepped outside that line. And I'm seeing a lot of that these days. You see it in the news all the time, where they claim the absolute, or they claim the absolute rules, and the people who establish those rules are stepping outside of it, thereby invalidating the rules. And now you've got apologetics and shit coming out of the woodwork. And, I mean, some of the things they're saying, like, you don't really have to watch sitcoms and stuff anymore. You just have to watch the nightly news or listen to some of the things that are coming out of some people's mouths and just, like, do you really think you're helping your cause by talking like somebody's been using you as a whack-a-mole toy? Like, honestly, some of the things I've heard, yeah, some of the things I've heard people talking about, I especially go to guys like Brian Fisher. One of our favorite punching bags here on the show, Can Ham.
As a matter of fact, Brian Fisher was one of the people I had written down because of his meltdown because of SCOTUS.
Yeah.
Jokes about Amish Wolverine write themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Although, you know, I was going back in the comments section on one of the earlier shows when I equated him to a silverback. Just because, you know, he actually looked like a primate. I actually got slammed for that. Because yes, I was insulting the silverback.
Yeah, I was going to say, dude, you know, the silverback community, you know, they're sensitive to things like that. You're going to have to write in a formal apology and send over some bananas.
Well, you know what? I will take,
they like bananas.
Well, give me a few seconds here, and I will just issue the public apology. I do apologize to the silverback / primate community that is watching this show. It was not my intention to offend you guys. It was actually more my intention to offend Ken Ham, but in the process, I overstepped certain bounds, so I do apologize for that. Ken, you still have no credibility in my book. You got nothing in my book, and I will come up with a new insult some other time.
Well, don't forget, you also have to apologize to the local Amish community, too. So all the watching Amish.
No. I can get away with that one because I can guarantee you none of them are watching.
I need to smack the crap out of both of you two because, A, silverbacks don't eat bananas, Tech. You racist.
Speciest.
And Dallin, they're not primates, they're apes.
That's kind of like saying, are you going to have the macaroni or the spaghetti, right?
We're damned dirty apes.
There is a difference.
Okay.
Well, they might not be damned.
One would hope. Anyway, so...
Have they found...
I'm suddenly very glad Arnron's not on this show because I imagine I would get a taxonomical smack now.
Yeah, one of these.
What if they found Ape Jesus yet? Yes, Harry...
He has hairy knuckles. Back on track for
please.
Let's try to get back on this. All right, let's start off
he
with.
He can fling poo without using his hands.
One would hope. All right, let's start off with. Let's start off with the easiest item to identify. Religious dogma. Tech, I'm actually going to get it over to you because you've had your little guy every once in a while. What kind of stuff have you seen religious dogma do? One quick example for when the back and forth happens, if you don't mind.
A lot of people who buy into the religious dogma, I've noticed they have this concept of, No matter what I do, I'm going to be forgiven, you know, whereas I don't have that. So if I do something wrong, it's my fault. You know, I have to accept that I've done something wrong and then I have to move from there. Is there a correction I can make? Is it just a learning experience? Do I have to go make apologies? You know, I can't just go, I'll be forgiven later. Fuck it. You know? Sorry, I know it's the PG show or PG-13 show today. No. But anyway, the point is that, you know, I point out to my son when I have him around and he asks a question about why somebody has done something. Most of the time my answer is going to be, I don't actually know why, but I can guess based upon this knowledge that I have. And so I give him my guess and I tell him, it's a guess. It's, you know, that there's a math called statistics that I studied that gives me an idea that I'm probably close, but that I could still be wrong. And I have to accept the fact that I could be wrong. Other people who don't think in those terms go, I'm going to think whatever I want. I'm going to do whatever I want, say whatever I want. And if I'm wrong, I'll pray for forgiveness. Or they just have that concept in their head, they're going to be forgiven, even if they don't attend church, especially in Christianity. And I know her background, my son's mother's background, they've had some church under the belt. But one of the things that his mother and I agreed upon back when we were still together and peaceful was that we would never force religion on the children. This was before I became atheist, or before I realized I was an atheist anyway, and that as they got older, they would be allowed to explore for themselves. So I don't see her trying to push him to church or anything like that. He has come with me to me with things that have been said to him, not by his teachers, surprisingly enough, but by other children, either at camp or at school, things like that. And I'll never forget the day he came home from camp one day, and he said, somebody at school asked me about God, and I said, there is no God. And they said, yeah, there is a God. And I said, no, there isn't a God. And I said, Peter, do you have proof that there isn't a God? Do you have proof that there is a God? No, no. Well, then if you have neither, maybe you should wait until you understand how to find out and then go do some research. That's going to take schooling. So before you tell somebody that there is a God or that there isn't a God, you need to learn for yourself and find out those answers for yourself.
Okay, Joe, you look like you're ready.
Well, I actually have a response to what Bogey had just commented on. Bogey writes, according to dogma, a capybara is a fish. Just putting that on the table. According to the Catholics, yes, they declared the capybara a fish, and the background behind this is that when Catholicism was introduced to South America, the locals had a long-standing tradition of eating capybara, and they ate it on Lenten Fridays, so rather than try to force them to a new set of rules, to make the integration of Catholicism into the native populations easier, they just went ahead and declared the capybara a fish.
Okay, hold on. I just pulled up Google on this. And by the way, they spelled it with an I. It's actually spelled with a Y.
Yeah.
This thing, according to the information available, is the largest rodent in the world. Its relatives are guinea pigs and rat cavies. They show a picture of one of these things being bigger than a house cat. How is that a fish?
Dallin?
It has paws and teeth. It's gnawing on a corn on a cob. It's licking somebody's face. It's got a monkey riding on its back. In the Smithsonian one.
Dallin. Or, sorry.
And the thing's sitting on a couch.
Tech. Hold on, Tech.
Yeah.
I have the answer. You see, this is the Catholics. And all things are possible through Jesus.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that in a second. Dallin, I assume that you have at least some...
sorry.
You've seen some of the picture on this one, too?
I've seen a capybara. I've watched a few shows. You know, things like National Geographic and other shows that actually, you know, go out and take videos of these things. You know, the point where the capybara is actually looks like one of the largest beavers you've ever seen. And
funny enough, that's part of what I was thinking.
Well, speaking as a Canadian, you know, we know a thing or two about beavers because they're all over the frickin' place around here. Shut up. Oh, boy.
By the way, there we go.
Okay.
That is what we're talking about.
If that is a fish...
If that's a fish, I'm a flying squirrel.
Yeah, well, if you think that's bad, they also consider sea turtles to be fish.
Well, considering that, you know, a little while ago, PETA actually wanted to get fish rebranded as sea kittens, I guess everybody's jumping all over this.
Yep.
And yes, I know that originally came from a rant, but there actually is documents behind this saying that PETA did want to rebrand fish as sea kittens as a way of making it less appetizing. But yeah. Let me tell you this much. Once you've had breaded, cooked pickerel that you've just caught that morning... I don't care what you call it, because the only thing you're going to call it after that is delicious.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that.
I have a question for you.
If that thing's a fish...
No, yeah. Hold on. Let's move on from that real quick. Here's something that I'm kind of concerned about. The Bible actually stipulates that you should not be eating bottom-feeding crustaceans, like crab and lobster and things like that.
Or Wait, hold on.
But the reason why they do that is because, you know, it's a bottom feeder, you know, and it eats the dirty stuff. Well, I'm looking at the diet of this rodent that they have declared to be a fish. And aside from the herbivore stuff, which is actually very cool, they also are coprophagous, whatever that means. It means that they either eat their own feces as a source of bacterial gut flora to help digest the cellulose in the grass that is in their normal diet. So in other words, they have to eat their poop to help digest the food they've already eaten. So technically, wouldn't that make them also a bottom feeder?
Well, as a point of order, as I recall, and I may be a little bit wrong on this one, I'm sure somebody will go ahead and chime in, it isn't that you are disallowed from eating crustaceans and such specifically. As I recall, the ruling says that you are only supposed to eat stuff that has scales and fins, which is one of those technicality things where it's like, okay, if it has scales and fins, it's fine. That's what you're going to eat. It doesn't specifically say you're not allowed to eat anything else. My remembrance on this one is a little bit fuzzy. I think it's a Levitical thing. I could be wrong. I've had a really hard time of trying to get through listening even to a reading of the Bible, and I've gotten way behind on my stuff, but that just as a point of order on this.
Yeah.
So let's kind of hit this. Why would the Catholic Church say this mammalian species is fish?
Well, I kind of explained that earlier.
Well, yes, but I'm kind of going back through this.
Is this with ketchup?
It could be. I do not know. For all I know, human could be, but we're not going to talk about that. But that's a whole other thing in the UK.
I would really like to know. I'd like to know as well. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. Unless when they first saw this thing, maybe it was swimming and thought it was a fish because maybe it spent most of its time in water like a beaver does. I don't know.
Now, depending, yeah, apparently it likes to eat aquatic plants, as well as fruit and tree bark, grasses, but they're very selective.
Yeah.
So they're picky eaters.
But as Joe pointed out, the Catholic Church has a long-running history of doing exactly this kind of thing, taking whatever seems to be reality, which usually is, and bending it for their own rules. Joe, I'm going to pitch one at you as a softball, and as Roman Catholics as we once were, go ahead, have at this one, Yule, because we're coming into the season anyway. What do the Catholics do with the season known as Yule?
Well, I'll do you one better. We're even closer to another one.
Yep.
Samhain, which was a pagan ritual exercised during the time that we currently call Halloween. Now, why is it now called Halloween? Because the Catholic Church, way back when, took this holiday, took this festival that the pagans had, and rebranded it as All Hallows Day.
All Hallows Eve.
Technically, it was originally November 1st, and they rebranded that All Hallows Day. October 31st then became All Hallows Eve, which over the course of many centuries came to be known as Halloween.
because if there's anything that English speakers are good at, it's completely destroying the language that they come from. Jake Forwarden, I'm looking at you. And yes, if we're gonna look, if we're gonna drop names, we might as well do it well. Anyway, and, Joe, going on.
Well, fun fact: you have All Hallows Eve.
Bogey, thank you.
All Hallows Day or All Saints Day, mm-hmm. and then you have All Souls Day, or as it's known down in Mexico, Dia de los Muertos.
Oh yeah, the Day of the Dead.
Indeed. As for a little later in the year, Yule was rebranded as Christmas.
Yep.
Because if you look at all the clues in the Bible, and you do your math, you find out that Jesus was more likely born sometime around April than December. But hey.
Yep. Now, before we go past that, Dallin, I'm going to throw this one your way. Saturnalia. I'm pretty sure you remember about that one.
The Feast of Saturn, yeah. Yeah. catch me on the spot here. Shoot. I'd have to bring something up on that, actually. And sorry, while I was distracted, I wanted to rewind the tape a little bit here about the capybara, because I was really curious.
Mm-hmm.
I found something.
Oh.
I actually found why the Catholic Church did what it did.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, hold that one for just a second, okay. Because I want to make sure that I get this, because I'm actually leading to something, I promise you. Actually, in that case, you hold on to that one. Tech,
yeah.
Saturnalia, do you remember what it is and why it is? Short version.
It's midnight and you're asking me to recall things.
Yeah, well, you're a Jew. Of all things, I would expect that you, of all people in the group of us, would remember something from many, many years ago that may not have anything to do with you right now.
Actually, I've got it. I just remembered.
Yes.
The Feast of Saturnalia was a Roman celebration, which, let's see here. Yeah, it was celebrated with a sacrifice to the Temple of Saturn, public banquets, big dinners, and the exchange of gifts.
Is any of this meshing in parallel here?
Yes.
It's
and
not with Hanukkah, because Hanukkah has 8 days of presents.
Right. But, Dallin, when, give or take, was this held?
On and about the 17th of December, according to the Julian calendar.
Celebration of the solstice, right?
It's actually, yeah, because the winter solstice is, I believe, December 21st. So that would be the shortest day of the year, or longest night of the year, depending on what side of the coin you like to look at.
Or better yet, what side of the bottle you happen to be drinking from at that point. Okay.
Some people say the glass is half full. Some people say it's half empty. At this point, I believe it's time for another drink.
Good.
I say, who's been messing with my glass?
And an engineer would say it is twice as large as it needs to be to contain the fluids already inside of it. But
No engineer who sees a half full glass would ever say that. They would say, give me another damn round.
That makes sense. All right.
I'm friends with a lot of engineers. I know this.
Okay, so here is, as far as to why this all goes the way that it does, why would the Catholic Church preempt all of these guys? Why would it say that a mammalian species is a fish? Now, I've pretty well got in my own head what I think the lay answer is, but, Dallin, you said you've got it looked up over there.
I did.
All right. Now, here is my – oh, and by the way, Bogey is making reference to the Christmas Krampus.
Krampus.
Which, God, we're I will see if we can get Seth so that we can talk about that sometime.
Well, that would be fun.
That would be friggin' awesome.
Anyway, I had a coworker who was a real – he did some really mean tricks to some of his kids, and he did introduce them. When he found out about Krampus, he went, oh shit, I'm doing this. And so he got one of his buddies to dress up Krampus a couple of years ago and visit the house.
Oh, that's just wrong. Oh,
his God. Kids' behavior in school, like 180 overnight.
Okay. All right, so here is my lay answer.
Better living through trauma.
Hell yeah.
So let's see how close I am, because like I said, I am a layperson. I don't know for certain, but I believe, from what I recall, overall, the Roman Catholic Church has tried to institutionalize the absorption, I guess is the best way that I could put it, of various other civilizations that it's come into contact with in order to bring them into the fold by absorbing and overcoming the traditions and the principles that a different group has been doing. Festivals. Thereby, for the... What the hell was the name of this thing again?
The Capybara.
Capybara, thank you. I've got the whatever the
Chupacabra.
Thing is.
Chupacabra.
And thank you, Joe. That is your fault.
You're welcome. No, actually, it's Dallin's fault.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah, I'll cop to that one.
Okay, so for this rodent, if this is a tradition of eating it whenever the hell it is they feel like it, why completely mess with their diet? Because they're going to get kickback on this, which is going to sound very familiar to the people familiar with Saturnalia. Why not just say, you know what, for all intents and purposes, we're going to claim that it's a fish, which means, hey, it's a fish. So in our record keeping, it's a fish. You can go ahead and keep on eating it, even though the great Guju in the sky says you're not supposed to eat meat on a Friday. So have at it. Congratulations. Welcome to the Holy See. Am I abusing this well enough?
You know, you actually are extremely close to the point where I think you've cheated.
I actually did not, truly. if I was lying, I would go ahead and I would laugh about it, and I would say, yeah, okay, shit, yeah, okay, yeah. I got it. All seriousness? No, that's about as well as I remember it so far.
Well, what I got is when the Europeans came over here.
And by the way, Chris has got it over there in the Q&A. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we all know that, well, in particular, the Catholic Church, during its expansion, you know, at inception of Holy Roman Empire, they did assimilate a lot of customs in order to bring other cultures into the fold in a way of sort of doing a bloodless revolution. Mm. You know, so Feast of Saturnalia, the use of an evergreen tree on Christmas, like all the things that we grew up with is all the result of, it is a complete hodgepodge. And I regret that it took me so many years to actually figure all that crap out. Anyways, to the capybara issue, and this is interesting because it actually has a Canadian slant to it. Hey, Buggy. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
When I can just about make Shujin shoot drink out of his nose, I win.
Well, the fact that it's tang and the fact that I'm like done, you know, yeah. Thanks.
Go on. Okay. Anyways. So the indigenous population over here, beaver was a staple to their diet. Now we'll get to the capybara in a second here, but mm-hmm. beaver was a staple. Now, of course, the Europeans came over, and of course, beaver pelts were highly prized. Beaver, there was something called castoreum, which is a secretion from the beavers, highly prized in perfumes and colognes.
Yeah.
So now you've got the native people going after beaver meat to eat. You've got the colonists coming over to, you know, take the pelts and everything. You know, that's the beginning of the fur trade.
Right.
Now, of course, the Catholicism came over with all the Europeans because, well, you know, you get one thing, you get all of it, right? And they started trying to convert the indigenous people to Christianity. Now, what particular season, if you will, I'm not sure what you would call it, where you have to give up something? Lent?
Yes.
You're not supposed to eat meat during Lent. Or it's one of the things, I guess, back then you were expected to give up. Meat is not acceptable. And as someone who had an ex-aunt, can you really call it that? I'm not sure what you call the in-laws after the divorce, but in any respect, one of my ex-wife's aunts was a very diehard Catholic, to the point where when we went to visit her on Easter long weekend, which included Good Friday, it was, yeah, you could eat fish, you could eat anything except like red meat, chicken, all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, the native population not quite getting it through their heads that, you know, on this day you cannot eat beaver. Pause. Joey got it. But on that, at that time, you cannot eat, you know, your staple. Well, the natives is like, well, what? It's meat. What the hell? So in the 17th century, this is a quote from Scientific American. So in the 17th century, the Bishop of Quebec approached his superiors in the church and asked whether his flock would be permitted to eat beaver meat on Fridays during Lent, despite the fact that meat eating was forbidden. Now, you want to talk technicality, okay? I'm off to the side here because I'm actually reading off a screen. Since the semi-aquatic rodent was a skilled swimmer, the church declared that the beaver was a fish, and being a fish, beaver barbecues were permitted throughout Lent. Problem solved. Now, the church, by the way, also classified the capybara as a fish for dietary purposes.
For basically the same reason, I'm assuming.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Right, because they had no way to kosher butcher.
Just as a quick little quip at the end of this, the author says, and I quote, "I have it on authority from my cousin Jerome, who knows everything, that iguana tail soup is a fave for Lent meals in Nicaragua." So
wait, what?
Hold on a moment. Now hold on just a moment. Before you start going batshit on that one, pardon the language.
No, that's iguana shit. That's what comes from a tail. Going on.
Iguana in South America is treated, culinarily speaking, almost exactly like chicken. To the point where they even have iguana noodle soup. Reason being, the population of iguanas in South America is quite large. They're quite easy to catch and are quite tasty. In fact, the term tastes like chicken, the only difference you will note between iguana and chicken is that iguana does not have, it is not as tender, it does not have that fatty kind of texture to it. But otherwise, yes, it tastes exactly like chicken.
Wow.
Now,
and cat tastes like rabbit.
Now, before we get
I'm not going anywhere near that one.
we are already about two-thirds through the show or something like that, and thanks to Bogey, we've completely derailed from dogma to, religious culinary. I do have something else, and, this does relate to dogma because this is a procedure that the Catholic Church has made quite a large use of. You think that, those two holidays are the only ones? I've got a whole list. February 15th.
Not Arbor Day?
No. Mm-hmm. What happens around that time? It's not exactly February 15th, but what's in February?
Well, because I was actually going to say for February 15th.
For the Christians.
Oh, okay, because now, what I was thinking...
Nowadays, it's for everybody, thanks to Hallmark. But what happened?
Well, I was going to say February 14th, is usually Valentine's Day.
There you go.
And February 15th is the day you sleep in because your cards worked.
Except that February 15th was originally Lupercalia, which was a celebration of Lupercus and Faunus. In Rome, Lupercus being the wolf god, credited with making sure that Romulus and Remus survived when they were infants. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which gives us the term lupus lupine.
Yep.
Okay.
And Faunus, a faun god, responsible for youth and fertility. Sound familiar? From this holiday, we draw the word februa, which was essentially a small goatskin whip that young Romans would do a foot race with these and whip onlookers. And the term, it translates to that which purifies. Now, februa, of course, is where we get the term February.
Hmm. Okay, now, okay, you kind of had to step away for a second, Tech, but I'm wondering if you want to drop anything in here before I go ahead and start pulling this all together.
No, I can't drop it like it's hot. Sorry.
That's fine. That's fine because I'm actually going to start looping this all together in just a couple of seconds. But before I do, which I know we're all pretty much going to the same point, I hope. First off, of course, yes, it is the 2/3 point, so I want to thank all of you who've been watching and for chiming in. Greatly appreciate that. If you are watching live, of course, you do have the option of using the Q&A system. Your comments and suggestions and questions do get on with us, and we can all see them, and we can go ahead and we can answer to those, which we have done. The one that Chris had dropped earlier for part of my comment was to add their cultural and technological distinctiveness to their own. Thank you for picking up on that exactly. Yeah. Which is exactly right, which is a commentary on the Borg. Anyway, if you'd like to drop messages over to us, of course, you can do this live while we're on with the Q&A. If you have longer messages that you want to send along, send an email over to me at shujintribble@gmail.com. Please put in the subject line, holy crap, so I know it's about this. Our next Power of 10 episode is going to be theoretically in 2 weeks. We are going to be inviting folks to come on at that time. If you would like to come on to be a guest panelist, a rogue, so to speak, and to be on live with us, please drop me an email, again, shujintribble@gmail.com, and let us know that you would be interested in coming in. And additionally, if there's some kind of topic that you would like us to hit as quickly as possible, I'm going to see if we can pick through some stuff, so to speak, now that you said that. Thank you so much, Tech. I appreciate that. And we will see what we can do on that for you. Now, how do we wrap together all of these otherwise seemingly disjointed pieces of information that's railing against the Holy See and cultural stuff and why things are the way that they are? Here's what it is. Religious dogma, in this case we're talking specifically about the big Holy See, the Roman Catholic Church, because it has been one of the biggest dominant forces on the planet for a long time. Their dogma says things are the way that they are because we said that they are, and if you're doing it wrong, well, there's two choices. Either we're wrong, or you are wrong. But we're right, so you're wrong. So, in the case of saying that a mammalian species is a fish, we'll just change the universal gravity constant, and everything is fine again. Yay! We've just changed reality because it suits our purposes. Yay! Go Team Q! Another Star Trek reference. Or you can just go ahead and say, it's okay to break the rules because we want to keep that 10% of income coming over there in Quebec. So yay! Let's go ahead and let you eat all the beaver that you want. Shut up. I hear you guys over cognitive dissonance. You know what? Screw you guys too.
And Canadians everywhere.
But the point of it is, dogma says you will do it this way, period. End of story. And you need to try to find a way through that in order to change something. Reality must be changed in order to come in line with the dogma. As opposed to the dogma has to change to be in reality, to be in line with reality, which is the entirety of the scientific process in a nutshell, except for the word of dogma, because dogma by its nature is not something that can be altered and twisted and turned. Oh, no, wait, yeah, it can be, as long as you turn it into a knot on top of its own damned head.
Well,
because numbers.
Technically, we of the scientific community do have our own dogma. We are not without our own, but ours reflects our mindset on this matter. Particularly, I'm speaking of the scientific process.
Scientific process is not incontrovertibly true, though. There's no scientist who is a good scientist, a serious scientist, who will say the scientific method is perfect, it's true, it's absolute.
No,
but that's what a dogma basically says, is that this is fact, this is truth, this is what you need to accept. And while we do use the scientific method to determine a lot of our answers, to find out a lot of our information, true scientists know that at any moment, that which we know might end up being proven false one day, and that we have to be open to that susceptible to that probability. We have to be willing to change what we know, whereas religions don't want that. They don't want change. They don't want you questioning. That's the difference between the two.
Somebody once said, and I've heard it said a lot, I've actually said it a lot myself, that the very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Einstein.
Yeah. I'm beginning to think that if you do something over and over again and keep getting different results, it's not proving that you're insane. That's science.
Very much so. Now, to go along with that one, Joe, I know exactly where you were going, and I've got your back on this one, kind of like Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson on this one. And here it is. And again, we've used this on many an occasion, and this is about as dogmatic as science as a process gets.
Yes,
and
process.
We have to go with our good longtime friend of the show, Richard Feynman, who said, if it disagrees with experiment, it's wrong. In that simple statement is the key to science. It doesn't make a difference how beautiful your guess is. It doesn't make a difference how smart you are or who made the guess or what his name is. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong. As far as science goes, that is about as close to dogma as you can get. The realization that shit changes if it turns out that it's wrong.
And that is a poetic way of putting my understanding of the scientific process. It is not to say that a finding cannot later be found untrue. That's
right. No. I wasn't saying that. And see, that's the thing. I saw where you were going with it too, Joe, and where Sujin Tribble eventually went with it. But the point is what I'm trying to say is that it's not a true dogma, because we in the scientific community are willing to accept the fact that at one day we may find that the scientific method is in some way, shape, or form false. And the mindset that a true scientist has is open to accepting that, oh, hey, look, the scientific method isn't right. We need to find something that actually does work, or here's the cases that it's not right versus the cases that it is right, things like that. And it's that's the difference between a dogma of science and a dogma of religion. Religions are, it's always true. It will absolutely be true until we tell you otherwise. Where science is not, we're going to tell you when it's right and when it's wrong. It's, we do testing, we do experiments, we do this, that, and the other thing. Here's what we found to be true at this time as we know it. Even the methods that we use, this is what we know now. But in the future, they could change.
Yeah.
But, and not because we want them to, but because we uncover new knowledge, new evidence, new theories, things like that. Religion can't do that by its very nature.
Okay, Dallin, hold on a second. Joe, back for you for this one, and then I'll get you, Dallin.
Just real quick, I know what you're getting at, Tech, but the actual etymology of the word dogma does apply in this case. It is not a definite. It is not an absolute. It only got that connotation when it started being used in description of religion. So again, another case of religion ruining yet another fun word.
Okay, Dallin.
No, I was just going to say, Shuji, you hit the nail on the head when you said as dogmatic as science gets, in that observation, hypothesis, testing, conclusion. And it's been a long time since I've been in a lab, so...
Wash, repeat.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is that those four... very broad strokes. I claim my own ignorance on this.
Oh, yeah.
But like I said, observation, hypothesis, experimentation, conclusion. That is about as dogma as you're going to get in the scientific world. And it can be kind of considered a dogma because those are always the steps. It's the procedure. It's not rules. It's not absolutes. It's just... these are the steps we always follow. This is the opening salvo of science.
Chris, or wait, whose question is that?
Well, we'll get to that in just a second. By the way, Juan, we do see you over there. Hola, ¿cómo estás? And please forgive me, my Spanish is incredibly limited these days. I have had 2 years of Spanish in junior high school and in high school, and that puts it back about 30 years, give or take, about now. So forgive me if I can read it quick to a certain degree. But
yes. I had 2 weeks in Cancun. I had to really think on my feet.
There you go. Yes, Joe. All right, I didn't even read the question, so go right ahead.
Cada tiempo masturbas, Dios mata un gatito. Por favor, piensas de los gatitos.
So help me, if you're getting this shot off the air by the FCC for that, I will kill you.
Just remember, if you're at the FCC headquarters, get me a double-double while you're at it.
I'll see what I can do. Okay.
So I like this question from Chris.
Oh God, I just channeled Johnny number 5. Short circuit number 2, where he's going, Los Locos, kick your ass. Los Locos, kick your balls into outer space, or something like that.
Okay, generally speaking, any movie with the number 2 after it is usually not really good, unless it's Star Trek.
Oh, come on. Short Circuit was funny.
Dude, Highlander 2, Nup said. Question is, what's the strangest non-religious dogma you have ever heard? Other viewers, welcome to answer as well. Strangest non-religious dogma? Non-religious dogma you've ever heard? Oh.
That any movie ending in the number 2 is bad.
Well played, sir. Well played. Yes. Yeah. Holy crap, golf clap, folks.
Please join us next week when there will be a spot available for a new guest host. Ooh, you're welcome. All right. I've got one that I can't qualify it as strangest. I can qualify it as most disappointing. But we'll kind of... Oh, no. Actually, there is one. And I'm using a very broad stroke on strangest, and I'm going first on this one because trickle-down economics, Reaganomics, back in 1980, let's call it 1981 or so, was when it had happened. The concept was President, United States President at the time, Ronald Reagan, had said that trickle-down economics was a way of helping to boost the economy. If the top layers of the socioeconomic groups had more money, they would use that money because they didn't have to worry about losing money. They would use that money and invest it into the lower tiers to build more factories, to employ more workers, to give more benefits, to pay higher wages, to bring everybody's standard of living up, which did nothing except add more money to the top layers, who then kept the money in the top layers. I knew that one was crap when I heard it, and this would have been, let's see, 81. That would have put me at 69, 79, 10, 11, 12. I was about 12, 13 maybe. And I knew that there was something wrong with that entirely at the time. I didn't need to be 40 years old to figure that one out. Who wants the next one? Joe, go right ahead.
Strangest one I've ever heard. You can't go swimming you can't go swimming after eating without waiting 30 minutes.
Gee, growing up for me, it was an hour.
Yeah, well, you also had to break through the ice in order to get to the water first. You're welcome.
I mean, come on.
I almost shaved that triple next time I see him.
Strangest one, non-religious? I'd have to go with that one because, yeah, it's odd, it doesn't make sense, and it is bullshit. Thank you, Penn and Teller.
Yeah. Tech?
Other than the Marilyn Manson song, I really got nothing for you. I just, my brain isn't, I don't
you need go more around. Coffee, dude. You need more coffee.
I'm caffeinated it up right now. The thing is that I don't go around and go, oh, look, that's a dogmatic phrase, or that's a dogmatic thought process. That's a dogmatic statement. That's a, you know, whatever the case might be. You know, I my brain doesn't see that particular pattern out and about me. So while I may have seen some, nothing stands out in my mind that I can recall. Really, it's nothing personal. It is personal. It's personal to me.
Okay. Dallin?
Actually, your little shot across the bow there is the very dogma that I constantly have to shake my head at. And I have talked to, I have seen, I have witnessed evidence to this about the fact that the second you cross the border from the United States into Canada, you're in the Arctic. I have heard of people who have stopped at the border, gotten out of their cars, opened up the trunks of their cars, and put on their winter clothing in July.
America.
Yeah. Or that we all live in igloos. I'll grant you the wall behind me is kind of a whitish color, but I can assure you it's not built of hard-packed snow, okay?
Congratulations, Canada, on preserving your national igloo.
And curling.
Well, the
sad thing is Rick Mercer is one of us, and yeah.
Well, no, there's nothing sad about that because to make sure that folks are aware of this, there's a he is Canadian by birth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you just listen to him; you can tell he's from the East Coast.
Well, anyway, okay. There's a Canadian comedian by the name of Rick Mercer who's been doing something called Talking with Americans. We're talking to Americans. I forget which.
Wait, are we talking about Roy D. Mercer?
No.
Oh, Rick Mercer.
This guy's actually funny.
And a brilliant, brilliant segment that he had been doing a while ago, 10 years plus, talking to Americans, where he would come down from Canada and talk to just people on the street and basically BS them with telling them stuff that was supposed to be about Canada. For instance, that they had just switched over to the 24-hour clock and wanted them to get them on camera, on tape, saying things like, you know, congratulations, Canada, on 1 million miles of paved roadway. And it's just stuff where even as an American, I'm just like, how do you, what? And he got some people, I think he got one of the, Mike Huckabee it might have been, to say something along the lines of, congratulations, Canada, on preserving your national igloo.
Oh, he had people in Arkansas at the National Library. He just about got W once, but that was back when W was in the, you can't say anything to me because my security people will beat you up. Yeah. Or however it is he normally says it, because I know this guy couldn't say anything in English. I've heard references to Prime Minister Tim Horton. My favorite was when he went to some of the Ivy League universities out there in the East and talked to professors, talked to students. And I mean, I'm talking, he blindsided these guys. And I was almost curious for the longest time to wonder, like, were these guys scripted? Like, there is no
way. We really are that dumb.
Yeah, but like, there is no way. My thought was, there is no way a haven of academia like that. I mean, you say you're from one of the Ivy League schools, Yale, Princeton, whatever. You say you're from there. That is supposed to mean, like, you are automatically, you know, like, uber brain. You know, like, you are the leaders of the next generation.
Nope.
And a comedian, a freaking comic from my neck of the woods.
Who is freaking brilliant, by the way.
Well, yeah, who is freaking brilliant. But he's a comic. He says things to get a laugh for a living. And, okay, he does it well. But he goes on there and makes an absolute laughingstock of what is supposed to be the future leaders of the free world. All I can think of, and actually, I don't know, this might be one for another day, but if you guys are familiar with Cosmos, you know there was the one episode about the guy who tried to, he managed to find the age of the Earth by looking at lead content, mm-hmm. and ended up creating the whole thing that eventually led to the end of leaded gasoline.
Yep.
Have you seen that one?
Yep. No.
Okay.
It was very good.
Yeah, Shujin, that has to be your homework, because what I'm about to say, it does kind of make you wonder.
I should say it was very well presented.
Yeah, well, but think about this, Tech. Like, you got all the people out there who are just, well, I said at the top of the show, in layman's terms, there's an awful lot of people out there talking out of their ass. I wonder, is this the result of latent lead poisoning from back in the 70s? It's a valid question.
It is a valid question.
Yeah, but like I said, for a Canadian comic, to go to an Ivy League school and make an absolute laughingstock out of the people that are supposed to be seen as brilliant, innovative, and will be leading the next generation of humanity forward. I'm starting to think that maybe I could have gotten in there if I'd had a bigger wallet. Now, that being said, I do hold a Bachelor of Science, just so you guys know. I am an educated individual, so... But yeah, it just makes me shake my head. Yeah, but I've never held a government office.
That means you're obviously more intelligent.
Well, the bachelor was in computer science, and I'm actually using that degree in my current job. So,
see, honestly, I think that people who want to run for public office should never be allowed in.
Joe. Who was it had said something like that? I'm trying to remember.
What was that?
Something on the order of, I would never trust someone who actually wants, people who want to run government should not be the ones to be in government. I'm trying to remember, wasn't that like Adams or something like that? Jeez. It sounds vaguely familiar. Damn it. Anyway. All right. So now that we've gone through this one, Tech, since the question had been posed anyway, is there, and since we're getting close to the bottom of the hour, we don't have to wrap up, you know, quite quickly, but is there a something or other that, thinking back on it now, you were told it is the way that it is because I told you to, because basically that's what dogma boils down to, that you now see that's just crap.
The thing is about my parents is when I was growing up and I was told not to do something and I'd ask why, I was actually given a reason other than because I said so. It was usually, it was either an explanation then and there or I'll explain later, just for now, don't do this or do this, which is probably why I ended up becoming an atheist in the first place is because, real answers versus imaginary, the real is going to win out any day of the week, for me. The whole swimming thing, I remember that. I think they were passing along what they had heard from other people. I know my dad had experienced at one point where he had consumed a large lunch, not a small one, but he was also an athlete in high school and college, and he did go swimming, and he got severe stomach cramps to the point where he had to get out of the water because it impaired his swimming. So I think that personal experience is what helped that mentality align. There's nothing that really stands out, like I said.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, let's face it. We shoot our show late. I mean, it's coming up on 1:30 in the morning on a Sunday. Most of us should otherwise have been passed out cold, stone drunk, or... No, that's really about it.
Well, it's not like we got anything to do in the morning.
Yes,
I can work on the deck.
As far as your quote, Shujin, I couldn't find anything particularly from Founding Father of that sort, but I did find one similar from Charles de Gaulle.
That could be.
I have come to the conclusion that politics is too serious a matter to be left to the politicians.
I like that.
Yeah.
So
I went looking, and the most I got were V for Vendetta quotes about the government should be afraid of the people.
There is a certain truism to that.
Yeah. I was just hoping for something a little more credible than a movie quote, you know.
Well, actually, it's a graphic novel quote, but...
So
the one thing I can say is that to look at your own actions, to do, obviously somebody who is really, really deep in their faith is going to have the dogma of their religion guiding their actions and their thought processes and everything else. But I say to those people, in hopes that I reach even one out of a million people, next time you do something and let's say you do something wrong or bad, according to your religion, or even according to society's standards, and you get the thought to yourself, well, I'll be forgiven at church or temple or synagogue or whatever, stop for a moment and go, well, what would happen if I didn't believe that? What would be the repercussions of the action that I just took or the words that I just said or whatever I didn't do, and I'm not going to be forgiven, what can I do to correct what I just did wrong or said wrong or didn't do that I was supposed to do? And take that action. Take that inaction, that book, that voice or letter, apology, whatever it is to correct, and see how you feel after that versus feeling after praying. And compare the two. And then look at the results as well and go, okay, well, maybe both of them made you feel good, but which one actually had any results?
It actually sounds like you're trying to turn Pascal's wager onto them. I'll be forgiven. Well, what if you're wrong? What if you're not forgiven?
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point, and thanks for highlighting the question or the comment, Shujin, because I wanted to address it. Chris in the chat says, this expectation of knowledge of Ivy League members is argument from authority. They may be great in their field of study, but doesn't mean they know about Canada. Highlights how very easy to look a fool if you get drawn into a comment on stuff you don't know. You're right.
To a certain degree.
Yeah. Now, I guess because the expectation from a school like that is that a person who attends a place like that, who is going to graduate from something like that, with the expectation of becoming that kind of leader in whatever field, as I said, at least, okay, this is coming from a layperson here. My expectation would be that they would be, at the very least, a little more worldly than somebody who comes out of, Joe College down the street. And again, that becomes an expectation for me based on perhaps a stereotype of what I believe to be an Ivy League quote-unquote scholar. You are right. Maybe it is too much of an expectation that they don't know what's happening outside of the library because, well, they've lived in academia all of their life. You know, so, yeah, I'm willing to pull a mea culpa on that one. You know, see, I'm not being very dogmatic about it.
Joe, did you want to say anything on that one? I didn't think so, but I figured.
Now I'm put in the same place that you were in because there is a quote that I recall that I don't remember who said it, but it's something that, you know, I was taught at a young age and something that I try to adhere to. Speak only of what you know.
Well, if we did that to politicians, we wouldn't have any.
Yeah,
there would be a lot of dead silence.
Yeah, there was something along the lines of.
Wouldn't that be great?
Better to shut up and seem stupid than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Confucius. 'Tis better to be silent and thought a fool than to open your mouth and prove it. Pretty much.
I was remembering something from Mark Twain along the same lines, if I remember right, or maybe I've just got it misinterpreted. But be that as it may, Tech, did you wanna hit anything on this one? By the way, the Chris's item.
Well, I mean, case in point, I was talking about something, and we had much earlier in the. Beginning of this show, not today's show, but in the series, and we had a regular who would post questions but didn't want to be on the air. There was an offer made at one point, and the poster had made a reference to me saying everything in a particular way. And I had made reference to it a show or two later, and that person said, "Oh no, you know, you keep attributing it to me. You don't know what you're talking about." So I publicly stated that, I made this statement. Apparently, I was wrong. And then later, it came back that no, I was right, proven by Witchy Bunny, and that the original poster was wrong. So it goes, well, how was I viewed when I admitted that I was wrong about something when I was actually right? How did the people who watched that episode feel about me as a guest host? Did they say, oh, well, you know, he's made a mistake. He admitted it, but he's making mistakes here. And it comes out later on, no, he was right. But why did he admit mistakes if he was right? Because I'm human. I can get confused just the same as anybody else. And if you don't think humans can't get confused, listen to Bush try to say nuclear. I'm sorry, that was still one of my pet peeves, but the thing is that anybody can easily look a fool by opening their mouth and making a claim or making an apology. How you can tell the fool from the not fool, though, some people can't do that. Some people can. I've seen politicians that have made fools of themselves, but they were very smart individuals. They knew what they were talking about, and maybe they just had a bad day or somebody tripped off their emotional circuit or They just did not have their mental firewall up between their mouth and their brain, and they said the first thing that came to mind, and they should have known better because they're on camera and you are going to eventually offend somebody when you say something wrong. But they were definitely smart. They were definitely knew what they were talking about. They just messed up.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the other thing, too, one of the expectations I would have for any prestigious institution of education is that their students and their faculty, regardless of the field that they're in, would be looking at the world and anything anybody says with a more critical eye than just, uh-huh. Now, granted, when you have a camera shoved in your face, you do kind of get that deer in the headlights look, too. And I imagine having a guy like Rick Mercer running up to you with a cameraman shoving it in your face. Trust me on this. I actually got stopped by a reporter one time asking me a question about a political situation that was happening. And it was intimidating. Like, again, I consider myself a relatively well-educated person. But, yeah, I was tripping over my words left, right, and center. Amazingly, though, I still made it into the paper sounding relatively intelligent. And actually, a heretic woman puts another one out there. She went to a good school in Canada, did not study anything about the U.S., but knows about, you know, main political players. Hates to say it, but it might be partially cultural.
I would just say it was very heavy advertising, because when you have a bunch of people standing up and screaming one particular name, lots of people are going to hear it. And that's what I see TV as nowadays, is especially commercials, as screaming. I mean, hell, we had to pass a law in this country. I don't know if it's a federal law or if it's just localized to my state. But there was a law that, or regulation of some sort that had to be enacted, where it forced companies like Comcrap, because I don't want to use their real name. I don't want to identify them on air.
And yet the description is hauntingly accurate.
Anyway, what was happening was you'd be watching a television show or a movie, and a commercial would come on. Now, let's say you had your movie goes from – let's say your the volume on your TV goes from 0 to 100 and you have it set at 50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're watching, everything's fine. All of a sudden, the commercial comes on, and it is so loud that you have to knock your volume down to 25. I mean, it's loud. Okay. You're getting blasted by audio. The concept being the audio is so loud, you can't ignore it. I don't know. I was pretty good at ignoring Bush when they had his microphones turned all the way up.
But he was kind of soft-spoken too, though, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. But the point is that all of a sudden now when your show comes back on, now you have to turn the volume all the way back up to 50. They got such a large complaints that there's a normalization that now occurs. So it's not perfect. I could have my TV set to 50, commercial comes on, and I might have to lower it to 40. Okay, but at least when the show comes back on, I can still hear it versus at 25 it being almost silent, just as an example. So when you say that you know who the political players in the USA are, you do realize that they're just a bunch of commercials lambasting each other, and that they might take this – let's say this is the truth about political opponent number one, and they're only taking this little tiny piece of truth right here, and then they're spitting it off on this whole big tangent.
Oh,
and yeah. then they claim it to be fact-checked and everything else, but because they used that little tiny piece of truth, they got away with it.
You know, growing up, we had cable, and we had our big ones, NBC, ABC, CBS, and depending on what province you were in, would dictate what state you were getting the U.S. channels from.
Right.
When I was growing up, I got all my stuff came from Michigan, Detroit in particular.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. You know, say about it what you will. But I do remember watching like a lot of the campaigns for the congressional electorate, for the governorship and all that stuff, you know,
and
as
Michigan
they came
was
by.
A red state, was it not?
I don't know. And back then I was young enough that I really didn't care because, to me at that time, the United States was a million miles away. It could have been as far away as the frickin' moon. Just because I was still in school, I had no plans to travel anywhere in my life. Except maybe to, you know, Paris with, you know, mystery girlfriend X. But anyway, but one thing I always found interesting was you had candidate A, the incumbent. And when the incumbent's stuff came on, I actually enjoyed listening because they were talking about promising to tackle this issue, to do this. And then they stated part of their track record. But what I found, again, what I found best was though, is they were talking about the actual things that were affecting their state and things they wanted to clean up. But then you have the opponent, the one that's gunning for the position. And all they would talk about was, oh, this person did this, this person did that. And this was my first exposure to an attack ad. And sadly, as time went on, campaign speeches or campaign commercials now are, they got nothing to do with the issues. It's
They're
all
mudslinging.
It's character assassination.
Yeah.
It's nothing but a bunch of ad hominem attacks, you know, between the two of them. And just like, it's no longer a question of they who win get to clean up the place. It's they who win for winning's sake. You know, and again, you want to talk about culture. This is what I see as an outsider, is I don't see the United States government doing anything to actually tackle what's going on. All they give a shit about is beating the other guy. And once they do that, well, then what? What's your end game? Well, we won. Okay, what about all this stuff? Well, no, that doesn't matter because we won.
And see, that's one of the reasons why Obama originally won against Mitt Romney wasn't because he was black. That had something to do with it, but that was not the deciding reason for it. And I know there's plenty of people who disagree with whatever. You know what? Eat a bug. But the point is that the facts are is that when Mitt Romney was on television, okay, he would say whatever his party as a whole would tell him to say. And that meant that he kept flip-flopping on issues like a pancake, whereas Obama was actually pretty stable on his objectives and his goals and the statements and the time plans. There were some things he did flip-flop on, but they were considered at the time to be minor issues or lower value issues in terms of overall winning all the points. That's why there was such a landslide in so many various states towards Obama the first time around over Romney. If I honestly believe that if Romney had said, you know, here's what I stand for and stayed the course on those statements, I think he would have actually taken it.
Okay.
But that's just speculation based upon one person's analysis of the political arena. And you're right. The mudslinging was horrible.
I remember.
Yeah, but the mudslinging against Romney didn't start until much later in the campaign. So yeah. A lot of people saw tons of Republican mudslinging against the Democrats. Well, the Democrats kind of stayed back and said, it's okay. We're just biding our time.
Yeah, but the thing is, and I mean, this was a I'm kind of glad they didn't use this particular strategy, but a lot of us in the podosphere at the time, because back then I was a bit of a vet in that whole thing, but I remember talking with a lot of people about this, and I called the Republicans out on it. There, like all the mudslinging, it was like, guys, why don't you just grow a pair, stand up and admit that your knickers are in a twist because of the prospect of a black man leading your country?
Okay, I'm going to pause you guys there because we're getting a little late on time. Yeah. Joe, they've had their opportunity to go back and forth, and I know how I'm going to wrap us all up, so I'm going to give you the penultimate opportunity. Yes, I'm using the right word, goddammit.
By the way, Bogey, in reference to watching a Hitchin sweep the floor with Tony Blair, that's called a hitch slap.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But
and Chris, I loved Chris's comment about non-religious dogma. Paris is a romantic destination. That's almost a dogma in itself.
Anyway.
Joe, did you ever get to go to Paris?
No, and I do not regret missing out on that, trust me. If anything, I would much rather go back to Leipzig.
Where's that?
Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I heard Germans know how to party. But anyway,
I heard they have good beer.
As far as American politics go, you're right. It has devolved to that kind of nasty play, and the worst thing about it is not necessarily the politicians that are in the running for, you know, one elected seat or another. The worst thing about it is the way that society as a whole has managed to convince the everyday voter that it's no longer a matter of vote for who you think can, you know, do the best for the country. And I have to admit, I am guilty of the same, because there, just this past election, I will admit that I voted, and you know what? I'm not afraid to admit it. I voted for Obama. I did not vote for him the first time around, but I voted for him the second time around. Did I think that he had done a good job? I think he could have done worse. Did I think he was right for the country at this time? Not necessarily. But the problem was that I fell into the same kind of thinking that all these other people end up falling into. You're not voting for who you think is going to do the best for the country. You're voting for the lesser of two evils.
Sadly, that is the mentality of a lot of people I know.
But unfortunately, does the perfect candidate really exist?
Well, see, that's the thing. The first time around, I voted for Obama because I thought he was going to do a great job. And granted, over the two terms he's had, he has done some good things that's not gotten a lot of press. However, the second time around, I lost a lot of faith in the guy, and I voted for the person, not who was the lesser of two evils, but the guy who I thought could get the damn job done and get it done well. And that was, I forget his name, it was the former governor of New Mexico. He was the guy who, there was a fire in the area. He was driving past the neighborhood house. The lawn was on fire. He had the driver pull over. He just got out of the car, and he just started stomping on the lawn, throwing his coat down. His wife got out, started doing the thing. Somebody else that was supposed to guard him got out and doing the thing. Nobody asked him. He didn't know that there was news nearby. He wasn't even aware of him. He just saw somebody who needed help, and he did it. And he, you know, the way he worked through the government was, this is not needed, this is not needed, veto, 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 veto. This does not help our state. This does not help our counties. And I thought he could do – he was running on the – he was going to run as an independent, but the – who's those other guys? Not the Tea Party, the Libertarians convinced him to – they convinced him to join under their flag, have him join under that flag for running for presidency. Mm-hmm. And after having researched the candidates, I thought he'd be the best for the job. So I was not afraid to vote for another party other than Democrat or Republican. Did he get in? No, obviously not.
So,
there's a non-religious dogma.
We're gonna wrap this. So here's how we're gonna wrap this all together. We've gone through quite a bit. So here's how I'm going to wrap this together, because we've as I've said on many occasions, part of the reason for this show is to go from the end of a question to the beginning of an answer, to play in that big gray market, to try and kind of hash out what do we think about the concept, what do we know about it, what can we learn from each other from our perspectives, and to have a better idea as to what does it all mean when all is said and done, the why. Dogma has got its place in a lot of different ways, and sometimes it's not a good thing, sometimes it's not a bad thing. What happens when you've got it is to really try to figure out what is it that you're doing with it. And sometimes it actually makes sense. For a parent to say, don't do that because I said so, it could very easily have a very simple thing behind it, like, you will burn yourself because that is hot. And maybe you don't understand at the time. And, okay, there's something to be said for that. You're being told without being told what the reason is. Maybe there actually is. Maybe there isn't. And sadly, that starts to become real problematic when you get into an area where people have consciousness, where they have opinions, where they have reason and rationality, the ability of thinking through a problem. What was it that you thought when you first heard the expression used? Stay the course. I thought it was an absolutely terrible concept, but that's what it was. It was dogma. I'm telling you, this is what we're going to do because I said so. That's the way it's going to be because that's it. And that's a horrible, horrible idea. Not just because of where it came from, but because just saying we're going to do this because this is what we're going to do because that's what we're going to do is friggin' circular arguing at its worst. It's absolutely blatant. We're doing this because that's what we're going to do. Why? That's the biggest question. That is the entire reason for doing this show. Why? Because as soon as you ask the question, why, dogma falls apart. Dogma falls absolutely over on itself, on its own head. It tumbles down the ravine into the water. And why is that? It's a wonderful meta question with it all. Why is why so powerful? Why does why take dogma and completely eviscerate it? Simple. Because the entire purpose of dogma is to say, follow me, because... And I don't know about anyone, but as far as I'm concerned, that doesn't count as an answer to me. It never did. And that pissed off people who were supposed to be teaching me. Because is not an answer. Because is an excuse. Because is an abdication, fuck. It is simply giving up. Because is the answer you give to somebody when you have no good answer and you can't back yourself up. Because is a coward. And what have we learned from the series with just using the word why? We've learned that we never, ever have to take because as a final answer. That is one of my dogmas. Because is never good enough. Is that a good answer? Is that a good idea? You know what? How about I keep asking the why? and find out if I'm right or if I'm wrong. So do I have my own dogma or don't I? Turn to page 43 to find out. As always, everybody, thank you for your time. We know full well this is not a sexy vlogcast. This is not a sexy show. But we do constantly think that we have something worthwhile to talk about and opinions that are worth exploring. As always, I would like to thank the panel for this evening, your time tonight. Dallin, did I lose you there?
Actually, you actually did cut out on me there. Sorry about that.
Me too. I didn't know whose name he called.
Yeah. I wanted to actually. There was one quote that I wanted to just leave everybody with, and this is from Sun Tzu in his book The Art of War. And when it comes to, believe it or not, it actually is in relation to dogma versus, I don't know if you want to really call it reality or what. Water shapes its course according to the nature of the ground over which it flows. The soldier works out his victory in relation to the foe whom he is facing. Therefore, just as water retains no constant shape, so in warfare there are no constant conditions. If I can leave with one piece of advice to everybody tonight, you do come up against dogma a lot in life. And if I can just borrow a quote from Seth Andrews, question everything. Do not accept absolutes. The second you do, you've lost the game. And until next week, good night.
Tech, of course, as always, thank you for your time, man.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, not running on full cylinders tonight, despite the caffeine and infusion.
At least you didn't fall asleep. Spoke too soon.
I'm just... Oh, hell. Fuck it. Good night, everybody.
Nice.
Close enough. Joe, of course, thank you for your time.
No problem at all. I will leave. I wasn't planning to do this, but you know what? I will leave on a quote as well.
So help me, if it has anything to do with a bird, I'm going to hurt you.
Nope. Simply this. Let me get this straight. You don't believe in God because of Alice in Wonderland?
I will admit I do not know the reference.
Well, you haven't seen it, so.
I'm guessing it's a scene from Dogma, perhaps?
It's been a while since I've seen it.
So I will.
The only thing I remember from Dogma is how to make a holy bartender.
Well, if anything turns up, I will see if I can find the movie. I've heard people who've said that it would be worthwhile as an ex-Catholic because it rips apart a lot of stuff. So
simply try to wrap your mind around this one. George Carlin as a Catholic bishop.
That in and of itself.
Bloody Christ.
If that does not scream incentive to you right there.
This is true enough. So,
George.
Everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us this evening. And especially Heretic Woman, thank you very much for your time. Bogey, a pleasure, as always. Who else had chimed in earlier?
Chris. Frequent.
Thank you.
Chris, there are indeed four lights.
Yes, there are. We appreciate you. We really, really do. And, of course, as was mentioned earlier, if you'd like to see about being on our Power of 10 episode, which is the upcoming 40th episode, please get in touch with me via email. I'll be more than happy. You can follow me over on pretty much anywhere. You just search for me under the name Shujin Tribble. You can find me Twitter, Facebook, pretty much freaking everywhere. It's really hard to miss me. Take care of yourselves. And thank you. Of course, before we get out, I always say my goodnights for all of you. And I said my goodnights for my lady, too. Because 9.5 years on, I am still in love. Matane Fujin. I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. And of course, everybody, until the next time we get together, as always.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.